Look with me at Proverbs 27. I'm going to continue to work through the Proverbs as we are still really in these chapters of Proverbs dealing with mostly random Proverbs. Really good, really insightful, but not too many are that connected one to the other. Occasionally we'll see a couple of connections. So he starts in Proverbs 27:1 by saying, "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth." Don't boast about, like, what you're going to do, because we don't control the events in our life. We must live with a day-to-day gratitude for whatever life we have, but we know that it could be withdrawn at any moment. We have no guarantees of taking our next breath. And so when we boast and act like we know what we're going to do, we know what's going to happen, we have this sense of command of the future, then we're really arrogant, prideful, and we don't have a way to know. Since the future is uncertain, certainly we ought not to put off the things that we really need to do. That's another thing that we might reflect on. Also, don't boast about what we have done. Verse 2. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. You know, you see people who sort of specialize in self-advertisement. They tend to cheapen whatever status they have. The guy who goes around tooting his own horn and telling you what a great guy he is and all the great accomplishment he's made and, you know, what an impact he's had, you know, that just doesn't sound good. That shows pride, and it normally is awkward, whether he thinks it is or not. You know, you really can't, like, you know, take respect. You can't just grab it and possess it. Respect is something that we really have to be given just by our actions. People have to come to see the qualities we have. What God gave us our speech, not to exalt ourselves, but to build other people up. And so a lot of insecure people who feel undervalued, and they're always telling you how great they are. But that's not what we're supposed to do. So don't boast about what we will do, and don't boast about what we have done in verses 1 and 2. So then look at verse 3. A stone is heavy, and the sand weighty, but the provocation of a fool is heavier than both of them. You know, it's less tiring to lug around a boulder or a bag of sand than to put up with a fool. You know, that's the biggest burden that'll wear you down quicker than anything else will, and we've probably been around a few fools in our time that have proven that to be true in our lives. Of course, the point is we shouldn't be like that. We need to be sure we're not the one wearing other people down. And then look at verse 4. Wrath is fierce, and anger is a flood, but who can stand before jealousy? I mean, anger that's not restrained can just really be devastating, and wrath can be a fierce thing. But worse than that is jealousy. Because jealousy kind of smolders and resentment and bitterness build, and ultimately it's satisfied only when they see harm come to the other person. Jealousy is really more dangerous because it's more hidden and it's a more long-term thing. Then 5 and 6, better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. So, you know, it's really better to have open rebuke. You know, an honest critique hurts initially, but ultimately it's a demonstration of love. And we shouldn't shrink from correction. It's the only way to improve. You know, if I don't receive it, then I'm doomed to repeat my previous mistakes. You know, a wise man doesn't fear correction but hopes for it. That's a little difficult. Think about this. You know, our backgrounds have left all of us at least a little bit weird, right? I think we pretty much recognize that. We need an honest friend sometimes to kind of help round us out, help us be more effective, help us take off some of the rough edges. It's so hard to see yourself. Because you sometimes think, I wish I could see what I look like to everybody else. Not just physically what I look like, but, you know, what people think when they see me. Well, there are people who might be able to tell you that and might want to tell you that for your own good. Are you approachable? Are you somebody that they'd feel comfortable saying that to? And what would happen if they said, listen, you know, I know this might be uncomfortable to hear, but here's something you could really work on that would help you a lot, and it would help your relationship with other people and so forth. How do we take that? The wounds of a friend are faithful. The kisses of an enemy are deceitful. I mean, you know, you take somebody who's just telling you what you want to hear. You know, you see people like that. To your face, at least, they will always tell you what you want to hear. As best they can figure out what you want them to say, that's what they'll say. They don't help you. They just reflect back to you what you thought yourself. Judas was a false friend, the kisses of an enemy, trying to achieve a personal goal. Much better the wounds of a friend than the kisses of an enemy. So there's a lot of truth in that. These proverbs are painful. You know, it's hard to, you can see that intellectually. It's hard to want that. And then look at verse 7. I love this one. This is so good. A sated man, you understand sated, like he's full. A sated man loathes honey. But to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet. As they say, hunger is the best cook. You know, think about it. You, when you're full, really full, nothing tastes good. When you're starving, virtually anything tastes pretty good. And that's sometimes our problem. We're so full, we don't enjoy anything. Self-restraint actually multiplies enjoyment. You know, moderation is not a way of denying ourselves pleasure, but actually giving greater pleasure. Because the more you have of anything, the less you want it. The less appealing it is. You know, think about what would be, if you wanted to raise a child from the time they were born to be the most miserable you could ever raise a child to be, do everything they want and give them everything they want the moment they want it. Don't let them ever have to even wait a second for anything their little heart desires. That is misery. You never can enjoy anything because you've got it. You know how those things are. I think about some of the things that I've enjoyed the most. It's just even physical things. They're usually the things that I haven't had very much of or very often or something like that. They're a lot more fun. If it was an everyday experience, it would get you where it'd be no fun at all. You know, you go to Brazil and a lot of people don't have cars and you know, driving is really cool. You know, after literally some millions of miles, it's not cool to me anymore. It's not fun, you know, because I've done it so much. It lost its thrill, you know, a few years ago. But if you've done it very little, wow, it's cool, you know, and so on and so forth. You know what then happens. When we get what we want, we have to have more and more and more to keep the same high. You know, it's kind of like a drug, and we can never really get it. You know, we never really, it just keeps losing its value to us. We lose our appetite for things we can get easily. And so I think that's a really profound proverb. I mean, he says it so simply. I mean, who could say this better than a sated man loathes honey, but to a famished man any bitter thing is sweet? That's about as concise a way to say something that's really a thoughtful proverb as you could have. I really like that one because it's just like, wow, that's really true. I need to think about that one. Like a bird that wanders from her nest, so is a man who wanders from his home. So, you know, when you're surrounded by your friends and family, you have the benefit of their counsel and watchfulness over you and so forth. When you walk away from the nest, you expose yourself to greater danger. You know, it's a warning to the people who think the grass is always greener somewhere else. There's a value in the things we know. Now, there's a value in venturing out in some situations, too. But this helps us to reflect on the value of the nest, the value of our home. Oil and perfume make the heart glad, so a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. It's so important to have good friends that counsel us We need to indulge ourselves in closer friendships with people who really tell us things that will help us. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother far away. So I think the idea is, you know, make sure you're a reliable friend, and then when you get in a crisis, better to go to a nearby friend than a faraway relative. You know, we say blood is thicker than water and whatever else, but there's a lot of times that we may be closer to a friend, especially a nearby one, than to somebody who we're related to, but we don't have much relationship with. A friend who's available is better than a relative that's not. I think about David and Jonathan. He wasn't related to Jonathan, but he was a lot closer to Jonathan than he was his own family. And you think about, you know, Jesus, and he said, my family, my mother and my brothers and my sisters are those who hear the word of the Lord and do it. That's who I really feel the closest to. And that, I think, is a very reasonable proverb. Family has its place, but it's not everything. And the friendship may be really more valuable than the family tie. Verse 11, be wise, my son, and make my heart glad that I may reply to him who reproaches me. So often the joy and the defense of the father rest on the conduct of the son. You know, it's just a blessing to have a wise son. Because if you're accused falsely or if people are lying about you, it tends to be something that sort of you can prove yourself with. It's a reply to those who reproach you. It's been a blessing to me to have Laura and Kyle, because even people who don't like me have to grudgingly admit, well, you've got kids that did pretty well, you must not have totally destroyed the family. You know, it gives you some degree of credibility. And probably the people who know my kids the best are the ones who would respect me the most. I mean, I think there is a sense wise children tend to be a credit to their parents. And so that's a reasonable proverb. Then look at 12. A prudent man sees evil and hides himself. The naive proceed and pay the penalty. Maybe that's what the father is telling his son. You know, a wise person stays away from places he doesn't belong and things that are dangerous. You know, the naive man just is oblivious to his surroundings and walks right into the trap. So be thoughtful about that. You know, son, be wise and watch where you're going and who you're with and things like that. Then I love 13. Take his garment when he becomes surety for a stranger, for an adulterous woman hold him in pledge. You know, get collateral from the cosigner. You're going to need it. You know, the whole idea again is the cosigner is the fool. You know, especially if he's cosigning for somebody he barely knows. What in the world was he thinking? He will lose that shirt. You might as well take it while he's there. You know, it's not wise. Then verse 14, you have to think about this one a little while. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse to him. Well, I guess you could think he wakes you up with it. You don't necessarily want somebody to wake you up, even telling how great you are. But I think there might be more to it than just, you know, that was an inappropriate moment. I mean, what do you think about the guy who's blessing you with a loud voice early in the morning? Don't you wonder what they want? You know, I mean, like, they're trying too hard to create the impression. You know, it seems like they're insincere about it. Their unnatural voice and their timing seems like they wanted to be sure you know how much they think of you. What they got up their sleeve on that one? Wise person sees through that tactic. We need to be wise about that. The guy who's just constantly flattering you and just praising you and telling you how wonderful you are at every opportune and inopportune moment is probably somebody who's got some ulterior motive. That's probably why he's doing it in such a loud voice so early in the morning. And then verse 15, a constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. He who would restrain her restrains the wind, and grasps oil with his right hand. Think about that dripping, 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 dripping. It's annoying. It's a nuisance. And it'll damage the house after a while. It just makes the place almost unlivable. You ever had a noise like that? Just kept going and you just couldn't think about anything but that? Well, that's this nagging wife who's just constantly harping, complaining. And he said, you know, you can stop her about as well as you can stop the wind from blowing. Or you can pick up oil with your hand that's spilled. That's about like nailing jelly to the wall. You know, that's probably a better analogy for me. But he said, you can't stop her. I mean, you can't keep her quiet. You know, you are not going to stop her from speaking her mind. She'll say what she wants to when she wants to. Good lesson for us not to be this constant critic, complainer, always nagging. Look at 17. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. So true. I mean, you know, you recognize that if you're going to sharpen an iron implement, you need, a grinder or something that's iron that will do it, and that friction that putting it together will sharpen the tool you're trying to sharpen. We're sharpened by our interaction with people who will challenge us and who will think deeply with us, who will criticize our thinking sometimes. You can acquire knowledge best by your interaction with other people. Somebody's really helpful to bat things around with people, to share ideas and thoughts and understandings. So that's really helpful. Don't shy away from interaction with your peers. Don't shy away from that discussion. And then verse 18, he says, he who tends the fig tree will eat its fruits, and he who cares for his master will be honored. If you work hard, you'll be rewarded, which is so common in Proverbs and so true. Then what about 19? As in water, face reflects face, so in the heart of man reflects man. That's cryptic. I may not have that right, but I'll give it a go. I think I know what he's saying. You know, if you look in the water, what do you see? Well, you can see your own reflection. So if you look in your heart, I think you can see the reflection of other people. I think the point is that there is a lot of solidarity among human beings. And you can know yourself by understanding, you can know other people by understanding yourself. So you can understand yourself by understanding others, you can understand others by understanding yourself. But you'll see a reflection. What's in your heart is largely what's in other people's hearts. I think that's, if that's not what he's saying here, I think that's still a very true statement, that we tend not to recognize how similar all of us are. We probably hide a lot of things, and we assume the things we've hidden are things other people don't feel, experience, think, or whatever. The truth is, I think the more you get to know people more deeply, the more you realize we're way more alike than what we thought we were. And so you can understand others by understanding yourself. You can understand yourself by understanding others. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Look at 20. Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, nor are the eyes of man ever satisfied. Now, I think Sheol and Abaddon here is like hell or the grave. And the idea is, you know, death, the grave, I think probably the better idea, is never satisfied. You know, it always take another one. You know, death is always hungry for a new victim. You know, there's, you know, they never, you know, stop the obituaries. You know, there's always more business. And in the same way, the eyes of a man are never satisfied. We always want more. Whatever we've got doesn't satisfy us. We're always looking for more. You never get enough money. You never get enough power. You never get enough fun. You never get enough love. Whatever it is you're looking for, you always want more. Isn't that true? And virtually anything, you always want more, you always want better, you always want higher, greater, you know, whatever it is. The craving is never satisfied. And almost the more you feed it, the more it grows. So it's the chasing the wind idea from Ecclesiastes. And then in verse 21, the crucible is for silver and the furnace for gold, and each is tested by the praise accorded to him. Now, again, I'm not sure I get that one. But I think the idea, just like the crucible will test the silver, the furnace, the gold, you praise a guy and it'll show what he's like. Because, you know, how do you respond to praise? If you respond to praise by giving credit to God and other people who helped you, or do you respond to praise by kind of swelling up with pride and gloating and feeling really big and important? You know, really, how you respond to praise is a good test of what your character is. It'll kind of expose the destructive pride. You might think about this too. How do we react when other people are praised instead of us? Like when Saul heard David being praised. And then look at 22. Though you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. You just can't separate a folly from the fool. There's not much you can do with foolish people. You think about like the goal of rehabilitating criminals. Can criminals repent and change? Absolutely. Are there some that there's no amount of rehabilitation that will ever change them because they're just, you know, determined fools? Yeah. I mean, there are people who never change. They're just a fool, and you can punish them. You can give them time. You can do whatever you find them. You know, what do you have to do? And they still stay fools. I mean, that's the nature of some people. And evidently, Solomon had run across some like that. Then look at 23. Know well the condition of your flocks, and pay attention to your herds, for riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. When the grass disappears, the new growth is seen, and the herbs of the mountains are gathered in. The lambs will be for your clothing, and the goats will bring the price of a field, and there will be goat's milk enough for your food, for the food of your household, and sustenance for your maidens. Now, I think the point is, work hard on the farm. I mean, we're in an agricultural society here. So the way you're going to survive and thrive and do well in life is to work hard. And it'll pay off. Be diligent. The nest egg you happen to have at the moment isn't going to last forever. One of these days you're going to need the productivity of the farm. You know, a lot of times we're tempted to kind of coast, kind of be lax in responsibility. Everything will work out. Well, it'll work out when I work hard. And Proverbs has got a lot of that, the idea of diligence in work. Then we come to some chapters that have a lot of opposite proverbs. See more of those in chapters 28 and 29. And quite a few proverbs on rulers and kings. So look at 28:1. The wicked flee when no one is pursuing, but the righteous are bold as a lion. Do you understand that? Why does the wicked man flee when there's not even anybody chasing him? Because he's got a guilty conscience. And he's just suspicious and fearful and a little paranoid. And every sound in the night and every look has something sinister behind it. You know, because he's guilty. Because he knows he's got something to hide. He's always worried, are they going to find out? Did somebody tell? You know, was there a hidden camera? You know, whatever. And so you can never relax. I mean, guilt is destructive. The righteous don't have to keep looking over their shoulder. They know they haven't done anything wrong. They don't have anything they have to worry about. It is way better to do the right thing. And if we do the wrong thing, to fess up immediately than to carry around that terror, that panic, that, oh, they may be finding out. Look at 2, by the transgression of a land, many are its princes, but by a man of understanding and knowledge, so it endures. So it's like, you know, when a land is a sinful land, there's going to be quite a turnover in leadership. Stability is a sign of good government. And when you've got just a succession of kings and leaders and princes, then you've just got a lot of problems in the country. You know, a man of understanding and knowledge will be able to stay in government. Really, you know, the ideal government would be a long-lived, benevolent ruler that provides security and constancy and is doing wise, righteous things. Unfortunately, a lot of times, countries get the kind of statesmen that they deserve. And a lot of times, they're not strong, righteous men. They're transgressors and people who are corrupt or whatever, and there's just that constant turnover and turmoil because there's not real character. And then three, a poor man who oppresses the lowly is like a driving rain which leaves no food. So a poor man oppressing the lowly. It's bad when a poor person preys on the poor because he knows what it's like. He's been there himself, and as soon as the power surge hits and he gets a little power himself, he turns around and does the same thing to them that was done to him. That is just not a good thing. Now, there's some translation issues on that one. You may have something that says a little different, but in the New American Standard, at least, that seems to be the idea. Then in verse 4, those who forsake the law praise the wicked, but those who keep the law strive with them. Isn't that true? Whether you obey the law or not depends on what you think about lawbreakers. You know, when you are a lawbreaker, then you always like the wicked people. You don't attack them. You're not against them. You praise the wicked because they're just like you are. They make you feel better about yourself. Righteous people are outraged by disobedience to God's law. They're indignant. They don't want lawbreakers to be tolerated. So you can really tell by somebody's attitude toward those who break the law whether they're a lawbreaker themselves or not. Then verse 5, evil men do not understand justice, but those who seek the Lord understand all things. Whether we understand justice or not depends on what we're seeking, what we're looking for. You know, an evil person who always disobeys the law can't think straight about moral issues anymore. And then look at verse 6. Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. So better honest poverty than dishonest wealth. You know, it costs something sometimes to have character and to be honest. And it may mean we lose out on some money, but it's better to be poor and have integrity than be wealthy with bad character. We need to determine that we're going to do the right thing regardless of the financial or otherwise consequences. Then look at verse 7. He who keeps the law is a discerning son, but he who is a companion of gluttons humiliates his father. So keep the law, but if you hang out with people who are self-indulgent, you're going to humiliate your father. The idea is you tend to imitate the people you hang with. I mean, that's basically the way that works. I mean, the more we're around certain people, the more we act like them, we talk like them, we do what they do. So if you are a companion of the self-indulgent, you will eventually, by your own conduct, humiliate your father. And then verse 8, he who increases his wealth by interest and usury gathers it for him who is gracious to the poor. So that's a good thought. You know, when we use needy people to advance ourselves, you know, so we're high interest rates, loan sharking, you're taking advantage, oppressing. Well, really, we're just gathering up money for the generous person because it'll eventually go to him. God will see to it that we lose it and the generous man receives it. So all this guy was really doing was just, you know, stockpiling money that goes to the man who's generous to the poor. In verse 9, he who turns away his ear from listening to the law, even his prayer is an abomination. If you don't listen to God, why would you expect God to listen to you? We listen to God by hearing his word. If I don't want to hear what he says, why should he care what I say? I mean, basically, if I want to be heard, I've got to hear. There are some people who love to pray but hate to study. Some people do the opposite. But if you love to pray but hate to study, you like to talk to God, but you don't want to listen to it. Now, God wants to hear from us. He wants us to talk to him, for sure. But he also wants to talk to us. He wants us to hear him. So we need to be sure that we're listening to and seeking God's message instead of turning our ear away. And I didn't want to hear that, God. Well, then don't expect him to hear you. In verse 10, he who leads the upright astray in an evil way will himself fall into his own pit, but the blameless will inherit good. So think about when you lead other people astray, you will eventually fall into your own pit. God is so much against, you know, people being a bad influence on other people. You corrupt them. You lead them away from the righteous path. So just really good things to meditate on. I continue to think as we look through Proverbs how much we need to think about these Proverbs. It's just like there's no way to talk a little bit about them and really absorb them well. So I've really been able in the last few years to teach Proverbs quite a few times. I'm teaching it again in a 4-day study in Fortaleza at the very beginning of November, and I'm excited about doing that. Every time I go through it, it helps reinforce it. It helps me think about it again. And so many of these are ones I've had to think about over and over again and still need to. So hopefully you can do that. Hopefully you can chew these over and just take them one or two at a time, think about them, go back and reread them, and keep working on trying to live them out in our lives. If you're not a Christian, you've got an opportunity tonight to come and obey the gospel. You want to hear the law and obey what God says. When we heed him, he'll heed us. And so we certainly don't want to be in a situation where God wouldn't listen to us. Won't you come while we stand and sing?